All rise. Court is in session. Call now 215-263-1079. Court Radio 107.9 WRNB is on. Brought to you exclusively by the law offices of Silvers, Langsam, and Weitzman, better known as MyPhillyLawyer.com.
And a very good morning to you. Welcome to this edition of Court Radio. I'm your co-host, Tiffany Bacon. Thank you so much for joining us today. You could have been anywhere on your radio dial, but I'm glad you decided to stop off here. This is the show where you get a chance to have your legal questions answered. All you have to do is give us a call at 215-263-1079, and we will do our best to help you. Let me introduce you to the team. We have the one, the only, Dean Weitzman, and the one and only, David Rappaport. Good morning, gentlemen. All right, how are you doing?
Doing well, doing well.
Whoa, awesome. David.
You're, was I off there for a moment?
You were. Appropriately so.
Oh, let's not get the day started off like that.
All right. Good morning, everybody.
Morning.
Welcome to another episode of Court Radio. I was busy yesterday down at the Art Museum. We had a the 2009 MAD Walkathon. It was quite fun. A lot of people showed up, and it was for a good cause. I think that there's nobody who's going to disagree that way too many people are being hurt and killed and maimed by drunk drivers.
Absolutely.
And whatever we can do to get them off the road is a good thing. David, we were going to talk a little bit about the Phillies this morning.
Yes, we were.
And we were usurped by the weather.
Yeah, you know, I was listening to, I'll give the props to 1060. AM, just for their news. They said something interesting that I didn't realize, but World Series champions last year, going for it a second time, and we get not only usurped by the weather in Denver, but apparently it's because the Yankees also had some hand in that with their schedule and the games.
Well, what is that? It's money. That's what it is. Come on. Everybody who's listening to my voice right now knows that. They're all shaking their head.
I know, but hey.
It's money. Well, and there's a lot more money up in New York for the Yankees than there is in Philadelphia for our beloved Phils.
It's despicable.
Did you have to go there, though? Despicable.
Okay, well, yeah, that's the story. So, yeah, we get bumped to like some crazy time slot, you know.
Yeah.
And even now, I mean, okay, so the weather's going to be a little better. The Phillies are starting at 8 o'clock.
Yeah,
in
why don't
Denver.
They play during the day?
Yeah,
Bud Selig, hello. Yeah. I mean, it's like
yeah, I definitely
crazy.
I think Bud needs to have his brainwashed because you don't start the coldest weathered team at 8 o'clock. They're gonna start at 40 degrees
right.
as a high for the starting game, and then they're gonna end up in the 30s,
20s, maybe.
And there's no
maybe.
Way
with a wind chill. Yeah, that's very possible.
And it's gonna have an effect. There's absolutely no way it will not have an effect.
Well, it's not. Right? Yeah, it's not baseball. It's snowball. And you know, so and the bats are harder. The balls are harder.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the players put their bodies in at risk, and it's not necessary. They could have started at noon and. You know, maybe picked up a 5 or 6 degrees, and that's important a little bit. Anyway,
that's the one Philly story.
Yeah, so we really don't have anything to talk about the Phillies, so we needed to find something, and lucky for us, there is plenty to find.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so let's get into it. By the way, if you're just checking in, this is 107.9 WRNB. And you're listening to Court Radio. We are the place where you can have your legal questions answered. All you have to do is give us a call at 215-263-1079. Before you get into that, we do have a caller already on the line with a question.
Okay.
Burning with a question. Her name is Kia. She's calling in from Philadelphia. Good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio. Hi, Kia.
Hi, Kia.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My question is, my grandmother has a property. Unfortunately, she passed away, but she did have a will. And it stated in the will that once she passed away, the house was to be sold and the money be split amongst her three daughters. My sister asked my grandmother, well, what happens if one of the daughters is deceased? And my grandmother grandmother said it automatically goes, the money automatically goes to her children. And my question is, and because it wasn't stated, I don't remember it being stated in the will, with the question that my sister answered about what if one of the daughters were deceased. So how does that work? Because now she's deceased. One of her daughters is deceased as
okay.
well, but she still has two siblings.
Here's the answer. It really depends on how the will is written. The will can be written either of two ways. One, it goes the proceeds are divided between the two surviving children. Or the other way it could be written, the proceeds are divided three ways, and the deceased child's proceeds would go to her offspring. But again, it would depend exactly on the verbiage in the will and whether it was written one way or the other. Without reading the will and seeing it, I couldn't tell you which way the drafter of the will created that document. But you should bring it to an attorney and have it reviewed. And it'll be very quickly told one way or the other. And if it is, and most wills will be written in the way you indicated, which would be that the proceeds would go to your deceased siblings' children or your nieces and nephews. But again, you have to the document will control because it could be either way. There's no rule or law that prevents somebody from doing it one way or the other. Thanks for calling Court Radio this morning, and have a great Sunday.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot, Kia. Don't forget, you can call as well, 215-263-1079. Now, Dean, you had another very interesting story about the Phillies.
Okay. There's a little girl. There's a little girl in Florida. Mm-hmm. She's 12 years old. Ryan Howard hits his 200th home run. He mm-hmm. gets to 200 before anybody else gets to 200 at the youngest age. Mm-hmm. The ball has serious sentimental value to Mr. Howard. Mm-hmm. So the little girl, you know what happens. You catch the ball. You're jumping up and down. A few minutes later, some guys in black suits with sunglasses show up.
No, not men in black.
Men in black.
Armed.
And they say, little girl, come with us, please. And she's 12. And her 15-year-old brother are escorted to the security booth at the Marlins Stadium.
Mm.
And they say, we have a piece of candy for you, little girl.
Oh, no. Yes. I hope they didn't say that.
No, they said, here's this other ball signed by Ryan or signed by somebody.
It was signed by him.
Wouldn't you like this instead? It's a shiny new ball. And mm-hmm. she said, okay, I'll take that ball, allegedly. Well, they gave the poor girl a ball that had zero value, and it took from her a ball that had at least a couple thousand dollars in intrinsic value and a whole lot of sentimental value to Ryan. But so what happened? The little girl lawyered up.
Oh, wow.
Lawyered up as
and
well
sued.
She should.
And sued.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? I'm taking the other side.
Well, I think, listen, you don't negotiate with a 12-year-old.
They should have just, what should have happened was Ryan Howard should have given her a couple thousand dollars, the value of the ball, right? Negotiated directly with the family and her and said, this really means a lot to me. But come on, first of all, the ball means nothing to her. Absolutely nothing, except that she caught a ball. She wouldn't even have known that there was a difference, except they gave her a brand new ball. That was the story.
I think mommy knew there was a difference.
Yeah, well, that's what it. See, there, therein lies the rub. Mommy smelled dollar. Now, had mommy known it would only been a couple thousand, then mommy would have just taken a couple thousand from Ryan Howard, and he probably would have willingly given it. You know, so.
What do you think, Tiffany?
Crazy.
Oh, wow. I think it's sad to, you know, have to take that from a little girl.
Yeah.
I think that's sad.
Oh, come on with the little girl stuff.
I do. I think it's sad.
She's been happy with the ball.
Listen, we're joined by our special guest today who's
I want to hear his take on
this. Yeah, he's sitting on his hands. He wants to jump in on this conversation. He's a sports fanatic.
Yeah.
He's also a preeminent plaintiff's attorney in Philadelphia and resides at the top of One Liberty. It's Robert Mangaluzzi. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. So what's your take on the 12-year-old?
Well, property's property, and it was hers as soon as she caught it. The actual story is that, you know, and again, this isn't Ryan Howard. These are people from the Florida stadium that went there and said, oh, you caught that ball, we'll bring it to Ryan Howard and have him autograph it.
Right. That's
and so she's
exactly
believing she's getting back the ball that was his 200th home run. And she deserves to own that. And
wait.
She can do with it whatever she wants.
Does she really think that, though? I mean, as I was talking to Dean about that before we went on air, and he said that's the story that she really know that they were going to take it to Ryan Howard and give her back that
well,
ball,
let's
and
assume
that it meant so much to...
She's entitled to get the ball back. It's no different than when Bonds hit, broke
right.
Aaron's home run. Pedro Feliz flipped the ball to me during last year's World Series.
It's funny you mention that.
I have that in my bedroom in a little stand, and it's got sentimental value to me.
Whoa, what was this? Pedro Feliz
yeah.
flipped you a ball?
Flipped the ball moments before he hit the game-winning RBI in Game 5. And
cool.
then signed it from the field on the day of the World Series.
Wow.
And dated it. And then it hit midnight, and I don't think there's any other World Series game used ball signed that day by a Philly. So that's got a lot of value to me. They can't come and take it, whether
right.
I'm a little girl or not a little girl. That you know that's the
law. Well, they certainly can't take it from you.
Yeah, really. Yeah, talking about lawsuits. That would be. But it's funny you mention that because Roger Maris actually. I read this to you, Dean. That Roger Maris back in
61
gave the ball.
He hit the ball. The fan caught it, wanted to give it to him, and he said, no,
that's
Keith,
right.
it'll be worth a lot of money.
Boy, he knows that. He is a sports fan. He really knows that.
No, sports fanatic.
Now, that is the true nature of what should have happened. But I dispute this. Is there do you know of law that it is your property? You're in the stadium. You have your ticket, which has a lot of disclaimers on the back of it. Just because you catch a ball, is that your property?
Well, that's what was litigated in the Bonds case. Remember when he hit that home run and
right.
the two fans were fighting over it? And certainly that's been the law, you know, for hundreds of years. The ball goes in.
Okay.
It comes out. The game the other day with the
Phillies.
I was
shocked. A bat went out to the stadium.
Oh, really?
Ruiz's bat went out into the stadium, and they sent someone up with a couple of autographed balls, and the person didn't have to give the bat back, but, you know, it's Ruiz's bat, and baseball
right.
players usually, you know, have an affinity to their bat.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the guy could have kept it. The guy could have kept it. I thought he did, actually. I mean, for an inning or two, he had the bat in his hands. I didn't notice that somebody went up with some balls later on, and coerced him.
Enticed him, right.
Maybe he should call my Philly lawyer.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Court Radio on 107.9 WRNB, brought to you by the law offices of Silvers, Langsam & Weitzman, better known as MyPhillyLawyer.com. Feel free to give us a call with a question, 215-263-1079. Dean, we do have a call. It's up to you if you want to take the call now or you want to get into your time.
Go ahead. Jump
All
in.
Right.
We'll take one.
We have an anonymous caller calling in from Philadelphia. Good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
Good morning. How you doing?
Good morning. Mm-hmm. How are you, sir?
All right. Listen, I have a house real estate tax question.
Okay. Well, now they understand why you're remaining anonymous.
basically, I was in trouble with my home with the real estate tax. And I got an individual loan me some money, right? It was basically $6,000, and we made the agreement. And I was, it was a desperate situation. What I did, I agreed, and I didn't know the law at the time. And I'm trying to find out from you guys what the deal is. I agreed to pay him. He wanted to charge me ten. He loaned me six, and he wanted to charge me $11,000 within a year's time. To make this deal, and I would turn over the house to him. Is that legal?
Is his name Tony Soprano, baby?
That's what I heard. It was a usury law.
Okay. Well, let me ask you something. Is any of this in writing?
It's written down on. It's basically written down on a little piece of paper.
Okay. Well,
what he was trying to do was $10,000. $100,000 a month to stay in my own house.
Okay, here's the answer. Any contracts relative to real estate have to be written down and proper. And in order for me to give you a thorough analysis of whether you have some concern about losing your house or not, I would need to see the actual contract. You know, if it's written down on a matchbook and it doesn't contain the required terms, it may not be a binding contract. But again, without seeing it, I'm taking a shot in the dark. So by all means, give us a call during the week, 215-227-2727. Shoot us over the contract. We'll take a look at it and give you an answer. All right?
Shoot it to you over the phone?
No, no, no. We'll, when you call us at in the office, we'll have you fax us the document you're referring to.
Right.
All right.
But it was never notarized or nothing.
Well, notary is not necessarily necessary to make a document binding. It needs to be written, but there has to be the proper terms. It has to be a contract. There has to be a meeting of the minds. There has to be a quid pro quo, and there has to be certain terms in there. So, again, without seeing the contract, I can't tell you whether it's going to be binding or not, but I'm certainly willing to give it my best shot once you send it to me, and you give us a call at 215-227-2727.
Only one question per person. Thank you so much, sir. You can give him a call tomorrow morning. Have a great day.
I thought we trained everybody, but apparently there's still a couple laggers out there. You get one question and one question only. Make it your best and your tightest question because time is of the essence. All right, we're moving on to today's hot button topic, and we'll come back to our second little sidebar on the Phillies later.
Mm-hmm.
We have Mr. Mongaluzzi in the studio today because I wanted to finally get into the topic of work-related injuries, serious work-related injuries that revolve around falls, which I think might be the most, certainly the most serious, if not the most common type of injury that happens at work. What's your take on falls?
Well, it's not the most common, but it's the most common devastating injury. A workplace safety is governed by OSHA. It's a federal law since 1970. Anytime you're injured at work, a lot of people think that it automatically has to get reported to the federal government. It doesn't unless someone's killed or three or more people are hurt in the same accident. But when you look at those documents and those statistics, falls are far and away the leading cause of death in the workplace and one of the leading causes of catastrophic injury.
How do you get around the fact that some people might have been trained out there that, listen, if I'm injured at work, all I can do is get paid my salary from my employer because there's this Workers' Compensation Act, which precludes me from suing my employer.
Sure. Well, Workers' Compensation Act is a great thing. It's been in Pennsylvania since 1920. Before, when you were injured at work, you would have to sue your employer for your wages, for medical bills, and for pain and suffering. And people went years without any money. So they came up with a system where you can't now sue your employer, but you automatically get your wages and your medical bills, regardless of your fault or their fault or anybody's fault. But if you get injured at work and it's someone else's fault other than your employer, that company you can sue.
Aha. Okay. So if there's another party, not your employer, who has caused your fall or injury in some fashion, the Workers' Comp Act doesn't prevent you from suing that independent company.
That's correct.
Okay.
And just speaking about double dipping, since you mentioned that, you would have to pay back workers' compensation for what they paid, at least in most circumstances, if you receive money from the other people.
That's correct. If you bring a lawsuit and you recover money for wages and medical bills, then the workers' compensation insurance company is entitled to get their money back.
So what kind of companies could be responsible? Give us an example of a case that you handled where other companies besides the employer were responsible, and what was their responsibility?
Well, certainly in the construction industry, the general contract, many of the employees who were injured are employees of subcontractors. And the general contractor in Pennsylvania can be sued. There's certain exceptions to it. But generally, they're going to have the responsibility for safety on the job site. So if there's a case where people are working repeatedly without fall protection, the general contractor knows about it, sees it, doesn't do anything about it, and that person falls and gets injured, the law will hold the general contractor responsible for not living up to its safety responsibilities.
Okay. All right. So I'm working for a plumber, electrician, the porta potty company, and I'm taking porta potties off of the, 17th floor of a new construction building. I'm injured. I fall. I'm killed on the job. The GC is the one that we're going to go after.
They're going to be one of them. There's a lot of different things. Obviously, roofers, iron workers who are constantly working at heights, those are the two job classifications that are going to be most frequently exposed to falls. I don't think we're going to have a lot of porta potty deliverers that are going to be working at heights, but you know, certainly all of the trades are going to be working as a building goes up. But the ones who are out most exposed are going to be roofers and iron workers and framers, by the way. In single family construction, many of the devastating injuries we see are from people who are actually putting up the wooden frame, who are up there working without fall protection.
What is fall protection? What do you consider fall protection?
Well, there's fall prevention, which would be barricades or gates, railings. You go to the Philly Stadium, you're prevented from falling off the side of the upper deck by a railing there. That's a form of fall prevention. And then protection would be a harness, which is like a vest. They don't allow lap belts anymore like they used to. With what's called a lanyard, and that's essentially a rope that's got clips on either end, and you clip one end to your harness and one end to something that's going to be able to withstand the weight and force of your falling.
Ah, okay. It's funny you should mention the Phillies, because there's not much fall protection on the dugout.
Oh, yeah. I've brought that up before. You know,
those seventh-inning dancers?
On top of the dugout, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that.
I think I've told you I've brought that up, and I think that's a hazard. And quite frankly, I think that the fanatic, when he's dancing up there, this may provoke some controversy, but he's not immune. The law says 6 feet, and you need fall protection or fall prevention, and he's probably dancing with an 8-foot fall hazard.
With little kids, usually.
Behind him. If he falls and goes down, particularly a backward step, your head rotates down, and he could have a devastating injury, as could anybody else who's up on the dugout.
Speaking of falls, you were involved in that New Jersey case involving the Tropicana parking lot.
Yeah.
That whole parking lot collapsed. A lot of people were injured. Who were the target defendants in that case?
Well, that wasn't really a fall case. That was a collapse case. The parking garage at Tropicana collapsed, and ultimately the entire system of safety there collapsed. It was a systemic problem, but essentially, as incredible as it sounds, the floors, as they built the upper levels of that parking garage, were not connected to the walls, so there was no steel-to-steel connection, which is absolutely required. It was missed on one of the shop drawings. It wasn't picked up by anybody as the design, and then the building started. And then when they started pouring concrete on that fateful day, October 30th, the weight of that wet concrete just caused the deck to flex and pop off, and then it was just like a house of cards as it came down, and
wow.
I killed four men and injured more than 35. It's one of the most devastating construction tragedies in American history.
Wow!
And that case ultimately, did it go to trial or did it settle?
No, we settled that case after, and it's incredibly amazing. I don't think people really understand how complex a case like that could be. We took more than 300 depositions. There were about 40 experts. The defendants spent about $60 million defending the case.
Good God.
And that took years and years and years to handle. Certainly the most complex case I've ever handled. But, I'm glad and fortunate that we were able to settle the case, settle for $101 million, which is the largest settlement of a construction case in American history. And it gave a lot of people who were injured a chance to begin to rebuild their life. We can't bring back the men who are gone, but it's the foundation for a lot of those people to move on.
Yeah,
but it's a lot of people involved in that case, and that so the number gets divided out. But that is an impressive number and an impressive resolution. $101 million settlement for the Tropicana parking lot case, and $60 million spent in the defense of it. And everybody running for cover, no doubt, and trying to point the finger at somebody else.
You know, it's interesting to me. you said it was incredibly complex, and I'm sure it was, but your initial explanation of what happened was so succinct and easy to understand that anyone could appreciate what they did wrong.
Well, you know, what I did is visually I put one hand up, fingers pointing straight to the sky, and the other sideways, and interlocked my fingers. And it's amazing because when we did focus groups afterwards, when we described it that way, they immediately understood it. And I think being a trial lawyer, part of the art is being able to take something complex and make it really simple.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at. Your expertise in that really showed, and you explained it. It took, you know, 30 seconds, and we all understood it. And then you explained how complex it was, but it really didn't sound that way when you mentioned it.
It's interesting because my partner, Larry Bendesky, who handled the case with me, and Paul D'Amato from Atlantic City, who was co-lead counsel of me, there's pictures of the three of us at three different points, all using that same hand signal, and we have the three of them in a triptych in photographs in our office to sort of remember that case.
Interlocking fingers. Tiffany.
You are listening to Court Radio on 107.9 WRNB. Don't forget to give us a call right now with your questions, 215-263-1079. Now, if you happen to be sitting at home wondering what to do if you or someone close to you are involved in an automobile accident, slip and fall, personal injury, or medical malpractice, contact the law offices of Silvers, Langsman, Weitzman, the home of My Philly Lawyer with over 100 years of combined experience. They will aggressively fight for you. Call them tomorrow morning for your free personal consultation. And remember, they don't get paid until you get paid. For answers to your questions, call them tomorrow at 215-227-2727. That's 215-227-2727, or visit them online at myphillylawyer.com. Right now, gentlemen, we have Kim calling in from Upper Darby. Good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi. My question, can I give you a quick scenario and then ask you the question?
You can. Quick scenario. Go ahead.
This is a young man, 18, takes on with a cougar, age 27.
Cougar
decides to have a baby, even though she knows the young man is not working, doesn't have, you know, just come out of high school like a year and a half late. And so the baby's born, and now the cougar and the 18-year-old is no longer friends because the cougar, you know, just had the baby without the 18-year-old's permission. Okay, the question is this. Okay, the question is this. Does the cougar have the right to use criminal proceedings in order to retaliate against the 18-year-old? Will the courts be able to see that this person, the 27-year-old, is mentally deranged?
Okay, well,
Boy, there's a lot of questions
here. But I guess my only question is, what's the alleged criminal behavior?
Well, allegedly, the 27-year-old woman is saying that the 18-year-old male is attacking her or beating her up.
Okay.
And it's not true, but accordingly, there's no witnesses, but I don't know.
Yeah, well, the answer is, as always, the facts will hold sway in the courtroom. If there's proof of it, then, you know, 18, 27, it's irrelevant. Deranged, not deranged. If in fact it's proven he's assaulted, then he would be guilty of simple or aggravated assault. But it's got to be proven, and by evidence beyond a reasonable doubt, since it's a criminal matter. And you know, we would not know whether that was going to happen or not until it happened, and until the facts of the case were made known. Cougar,
he's also 18 years old. He's an adult, and the cougar's an adult. You mentioned something about her.
I never heard that before. Cougar.
You never heard it?
No, never heard of a cougar.
Come on,
that's a TV show that if you pay attention, you'll see it.
Yeah, pay attention,
Dean. Older women going after younger men.
That's right. Mm. Pay attention, Dean.
I was an Eagle Scout. We weren't watching cougars. We were earning merit
the
badges.
The Scoutmaster was involved in that. Okay.
Oh, wow. And scene. Okay.
No. I was in the
little
in the
Sunday skits. Morning laughter.
All right. Have a great day. Thanks for calling Court Radio.
All right. Be well.
Thanks a lot, Kim.
Our lines are blowing up.
Yes, we have a couple calls.
All right. Go on. Hit it, Tiffany.
Yes. We have, I think it's Roosevelt calling in from Philadelphia. Good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
Hey, good morning.
Hey,
good morning.
Roosevelt. What's up?
Hey, I got a real estate question. My ex-wife has a real estate property in Philadelphia, and she has a renter there that hasn't paid her rent in over a year. Every time she goes to court, she went to court three times this year, and every time she goes, what he does, he files for bankruptcy, and then I guess after the court date is over, he files for it, and then it just drops. Well, I guess they go to court, and the judge says she can't evict him because he filed for bankruptcy. So he's using this tactic. Every time they go, he filed for bankruptcy. So the judge says she can't evict him.
Well, okay, here's the answer to that. I mean, bankruptcy does trump any state court action. But I find it difficult to believe that somebody gets to file three bankruptcies in a year.
He's doing it.
Okay.
Every time she goes, he does it.
I'll tell you a story, a quick story, and it's not going to be the legal answer that you might be looking for because I don't have one. But
right.
I once had a friend who I played a monthly card game with, Larry. And Larry owned a lot of properties, and he had a lot of, as anybody who owns a lot of properties, he got some deadbeats in there. And, he wanted to get them out. And so he'd sue them, and he'd do what your wife did and bring them to court, and they would drag it out for 3 months, 4 months. And Larry was not getting paid rent for all those months. So Larry decided he was going to be a smarter businessman about it. And he went when they were late and he realized I'm not going to want these as tenants any longer. He'd show up, knock on the door, and he'd say, "Hello, it's Larry, the landlord." And they'd open the door and he'd say, "I have here $500 cash." And he'd show them the $500, and he'd say, "Now, you can have this $500 if you're out by Friday. And as you're leaving, I'll be handing you this $500 and your security deposit back." And so he made it financially, he enticed them financially to get out of the house. Guess what? Most of the people took Larry up on his offer, and they were gone.
Right.
I'm not suggesting that that's what your wife needs to do, but if she's had a tenant for a year who hasn't paid his rent, it might have been a better deal for her to pay him something a long time ago to get him out. But anyway, so you can use that if you like him, and you can call it the Dean solution.
No, the Larry solution.
The Larry solution. There you go. God bless Larry, who's now in a trailer park somewhere in Florida with his wife. In retirement, using the proceeds of his real estate ventures from Philadelphia. All right, take care. Have a great day.
All right.
Thanks a lot, Roosevelt. Anthony is calling in from East Falls. Good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
Tiffany snuck Anthony in. Hi, Anthony. Good morning.
I have a question about a three-party lawsuit.
About what?
Third party.
A third party.
Case, a lawsuit.
Sure. Go ahead, sir.
I understand Workman Compensation has to get theirs. Back from any proceeds that they had paid out to a work-related accident.
Right.
But if you sign papers for 33% from the attorneys,
right,
does he get 33% off each individual case? It's a three-section lawsuit. Does he get 33% off each?
This is what he gets. I mean, I can't tell you what the agreement says, but generally speaking, anything you get, any amount you agree to settle for, before you get the money, he gets a third of what he's recovered for you from all sources, from all claims. So if there's multiple parties or multiple claims, he's going to get a third of the gross. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, I just think it's a good time to talk about what a contingency fee is.
Okay.
Because a lot of people don't know. A contingency fee is how most personal injury lawyers work. They get a percentage of the recovery, but they don't get paid if they lose. They get zip, and they put up the costs. And then if they win, they get a third of it. If they win a lot, they get a third of a lot. And it's really.
I want to just interrupt you. A third is we're using that as an example today, for Roosevelt, but it could be more, it could be less.
Correct.
I mean, this is something which is, you know, subject to somewhat of negotiation at the in the beginning of the claim. Go ahead.
But the reason you really need it in our society is that if you get injured, and let's say you're an injured worker, and there was nothing like a contingency fee, and you came to a lawyer and they'd say, okay, this case is going to take 3 years to litigate. I need a $50,000 retainer to start. I'll bill whatever the amount is. Lawyers bill $300, $400, $500 an hour. And when I've exhausted that retainer, probably in the next 5 or 6 months, I'm going to come back to you for another $50,000.
Well, the Trump injured case.
Yeah, an injured,
none of those people would have been able
an injured worker cannot afford that. Yeah. Oh, but let me tell you, the defendant who is insured by a multi-billion-dollar insurance company can.
Sure.
So if you didn't have a contingency fee, then ordinary folk, average people who can't afford $50,000 or $100,000 or $150,000 or, you know, in Tropicana, you know, $50 or $60 million of attorney's fees, you can't get into the courthouse. So the contingency fee, being able to work at a percentage basis, is really the key to the courthouse door for 90% of Americans, other than those who are so rich that they could afford any amount.
And those aren't the ones who are bringing claims in most likelihood anyway.
Correct.
Workers' compensation, is that a cheaper letter to attain?
Workers' compensation is controlled by statute in Pennsylvania, and a maximum legal fee is
20%.
Yeah, so any recovery for you from workers' compensation maxes out at 20%. Third-party cases are subject to negotiation between the client and the attorney.
That's not a bad percentage.
That's
normally a 60-40.
Yeah, that's a standard low percentage, I think.
Yeah, right. For minors, it's mandatory that it's 1/3. Usually, attorneys charge a little more for adults.
Sounds like you got a good deal, Roosevelt.
Yeah.
Thank you for calling and have
that's
a great.
Anthony.
Oh, sorry, Anthony.
That's okay.
All right, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Anthony. Thanks for calling. This is Court Radio on 107.9 WRMB. Don't forget to give us a call at 215-263-1079 to ask your questions.
215-263-1079.
Yep.
Let's get back. Oh, wait. Let me jump back for 1 second before we get back to slip and falls or work-related injuries and talk about the dumbest criminal of the week.
You had to get this one in.
The dumbest criminal is the criminal who gets tossed out of Citizens Bank Park, then goes and fills out an application for employment at that very same Citizens Bank Park, and while filling out an application with his real name, his real address, and date of birth, decides he's going to steal 3 World Series rings off
what?
Of... Yeah.
It's sitting on the desk of where he's filling out the application.
Well, he actually swipes an envelope. I don't think
right.
he knew the rings were in there, so he probably was as surprised as the Phillies were.
And of course, listen, criminals, we live in a video society. PlayStation, Xbox,
wow.
Everybody sees what everybody does. So if you're going to steal something, you know, understand that probably there's going to be a video camera, especially at the stadium. There's cameras everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You can't. I have an iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
I switched from BlackBerry. And I have an application on my iPhone that permits me to see every road in Philadelphia and the traffic on there.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're driving around now in the city,
mm-hmm.
there's cameras everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
We're being filmed constantly. It's no longer a nice place to be a criminal. You know, I mean, things get filmed. So
true that.
But I think the rings were, these are rings that were going to be given out to people who work for the Phillies.
These were the fake World Series rings.
Right.
These were the $1,100 World Series rings, not the $11,000 World Series rings.
So he would have been, out of it anyway. But
yeah.
Unbelievable.
So they, you know, they like 3 hours later, they come knocking on his door. Hello.
You want the envelope back,
yeah, give me the envelope. What envelope?
And you don't have a job, by the way. You're not getting hired.
How about that?
Did they now? Did they take his application the day he got thrown out of the
bank? Yeah,
it was the same day.
He gets thrown out of the park and walks straight into their executive offices or administrative offices.
That's hilarious. That is great. He deserves to get those rings, I think.
Yeah, well,
for them being stupid enough to bring him in.
We won't say his name, Matthew, but he definitely needs to take a couple of smart pills. But you know, the thing is, he's from New Jersey, so
Stop.
You know how I feel about the Coors Light Christy race. I mean, if I see one more commercial of Christy, the 400-pound U.S. attorney getting out of his car, and Coors Light, you know, with mammograms, I want to kill myself. Enough already with these commercials. There should be
out
a limit,
control.
You know.
Yeah, control right
well,
now.
Well, actually, that's a good question if we're talking about the law, because there's probably the single most important decision that the Supreme Court might render, in my opinion, in 100 years right now in front of the U.S. Supreme Court, had to do with a film about Hillary Clinton and whether corporations can, there can be a limit on their advertising. And there have been. And if the Supreme Court holds that there's no limits on corporations, it will change the face of America, because they could put up, I mean, last year maybe $1 billion was spent altogether in the presidential, congressional, and Senate races. That's a drop in the bucket. If this opinion says there's no limit, corporations can go out and literally buy America.
Yeah.
They could put together $10, $15, $20 billion and absolutely control the political process. And most people don't even understand that that case is up there and the devastating impact it could have.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm getting text messages from everybody from the state of New Jersey who's now dissing
me. You should.
Yeah, because you're dead wrong.
You should.
For that.
You, Jersey, you know.
But, you know, I still want to represent you. Oh, I love you.
But you'll go see Bruce Springsteen, right?
Yeah.
You wanted to know if there were still tickets available for that.
All right. You don't deserve to see Bruce Springsteen. All right.
Hey, listen, everybody should know I love the boss.
I know.
I'm wearing my Springsteen t-shirt right now.
Sorry, right. New Jersey. My Philly lawyer loves you.
I heard a little excerpt of he did the whole album. I think it was Born in the USA the other night.
I was there.
Were you there? Awesome.
All right. Let's come on. Let's go. Fellas, let's bring it back to falls in the workplace. What can people do? What can people do to prevent it? What can people do? And if they have a problem, what should happen?
Sure. How do you prevent it? I mean, it starts at the top. I mean, workplace safety always starts with the people making the decisions and running the show. It's interesting because it's never the guy wearing the suit with the cell phone on his hip at the construction site, the superintendent, who gets hurt. It's always the guy wearing work boots. He's the guy who falls. I really think that that's the way it has to start. So we need oversight, and obviously the threat of a lawsuit and the actuality of a lawsuit helps make it happen. I go out and actually lecture to general contractors, insurance companies, and say, hey, I probably handle more fall cases than any attorney in the United States, and put me out of business. I'm a pretty good lawyer.
Put me out of business.
I'm a pretty good lawyer. I think I could find something else to do. So that's the challenge. And the construction industry is becoming safer. Mentality of, hey, we're not going to wear fall protection, not going to do it, thankfully, is changing.
So we're trial attorneys, are making some progress in changing the safety of the workplace.
I mean, I think that's one of the things that means the most to me is when somebody changes something. And I'll tell you, probably the most significant example of my career, I represented a baseball player, high school player, got hit in the helmet with a pitch. He played for Salesianum, suffered a fairly devastating brain injury. And we tested the helmet and found out that the helmet maxed out at 53 miles an hour, and then it had no more protection. If you got hit head on straight in the temple, And it had
they're throwing pitches at 93 miles.
Yeah, well, the president of the company, when I deposed him, didn't know how fast people threw pitches, which I thought was just outrageous.
Wow. He's selling a product that protects somebody from pitches, so, but doesn't know how fast they go.
But here's the moral of the story. So,
wasn't wearing work boots.
We came up with we tested it. We found out if there was if we put in 3/4 of an inch of padding rather than the 1/4 of an inch that they had, that it would protect up to 100 miles an hour, which is about as fast as you could throw. I think the fastest pitch in the history of the world is like 102. And then after this accident, they changed the helmet. And literally, the number of kids suffering concussions and brain injuries went from about 10,000 a year and dropped radically to about 1,000 a year. So, and that was back maybe 15 years ago. So, a lawsuit provoked a change, and literally hundreds of thousands of Little League kids have been spared injuries because of that design change. And so, we're pretty proud of that.
Yeah, well, not to grandstand it, but that's the whole argument we've been making. We've made it here before about the tort reform issue. People need to realize that this is really one of the only ways to effectuate change, safety change, in our country,
right,
with the threat of a lawsuit.
We want accident reform, not tort reform.
Right.
The unfortunate thing is, from a proof standpoint, it's very difficult to prove a negative. You said it. There was 10,000 serious head injuries, and now we're down to 1,000. That means 9,000 children are walking around out there who should have or could have been seriously injured with a brain injury because of a failure on the helmet companies to manufacture safe equipment. Those 9,000 people don't realize that they're able to exist and function today because of the lawsuits brought on behalf of this child who was injured.
Well, think about our history. All the major safety changes, you know, the Pinto, flammable clothing on children. I could go on helmets, everything. Most of them have been the changes have been effectuated by lawsuits.
Because given free reign, free business
profits
wants to
over,
make
right.
as much money as possible, and they're not going to save the 25 cents it takes to put in an extra 1/2 inch of foam rubber.
Yeah, and they would have to make the shell of the helmet larger. That was the real cost.
Uh-huh.
The shell.
The
yeah.
shell large.
A
dollar, I saw, by the way, I saw, maybe it was Victorino who was playing with a new helmet that maybe become mandatory next year. It was a bigger helmet on
yeah,
his head.
I've seen
Did you
it.
See
yeah.
that?
It was much bigger. Actually, Branch Rickey, who broke the color line, bringing in Jackie Robinson, was the one who first developed the plastic batting helmet back in the 50s, came up with the idea after a Dodger was beaned.
Wow.
Neat. The ear the protection of the ear.
And now they all have to wear it.
Sure.
Mandatory.
And they should.
Yep. That's right. Because we like them.
You're listening to Court Radio on 107.9 WRNB. Remember now, if you've been injured from an automobile accident, slip and fall, work-related mishap, or medical negligence, just call the attorneys at Silvers, Langsam & Weitzman, better known as My Philly Lawyer. Don't you give it a second thought. Call for your free personal consultation. And remember, they don't get paid until you get paid. They have over 100 years of combined experience, so let them aggressively fight for you. You just sit back and get well. Call them tomorrow at 215-227-2727. That's 215-227-2727. Or you can visit their informative website at myphillylawyer.com. Can't wait till tomorrow. Have a burning question right now? Call us in studio, 215-263-1079. We have Tori from Collingdale calling in. Good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio. Hello?
Hello?
Tori? Yes, good morning. You're live on the air.
This is Tori.
Yes, Tori, you're live on the air. Can you turn your radio down, please?
All right.
Okay, thank you. What is your question, Tori?
I have to turn my radio down, like you said.
Okay, Tori, we're on the air right now.
All right, what's going on? I have a friend, and she got married back in May of 1990. And she got sick and everything, and she thought that she was divorced, and she was going to marry someone else, but she couldn't marry him because she thought she was divorced, and then she called her husband up. He told her that he was still married to her.
Okay. And?
So now another guy has come along and asked to marry her.
So it sounds like she needs to get a divorce. Is that...
So she's been married only 1 year and separated all the rest of the years.
Okay.
Ms. Tori,
how much would it cost for her to get a divorce?
Okay, we got the question. How much? Well, you know, that's...
She doesn't have any children by him.
Okay, hold on.
So that makes it easier.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a simple divorce. Property settlement's really not an issue, and neither are children, so... It shouldn't be that expensive, I would say, probably. You know, I don't do... We at My Philly Lawyer do a lot of things. One thing we don't do, and I'm here to say it right now, is we don't do divorces. We don't do domestic relations. But my friends in the business who do it tell me that, you know, for probably about $1,000 or $1,500, most people can get a simple divorce, including filing fees in Philadelphia. So that would be a good ballpark estimate. And unfortunately, I sympathize with you because, you know, you want to get remarried, or your friend does, wink, wink. but, you know, it's not going to happen until you get divorced. Thank you, Tori, for calling Court Radio, and have a great Sunday.
Could you refer me to someone?
I certainly could, and you can call the office tomorrow at
215-227-2727.
Oh, Tiffany's having a bird. All right, Tori, I got to go. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you so much. Have a great day. And keep listening. If you need the phone numbers set again, we will say them before the end of the program. Sean is calling in from New Jersey.
Hey.
Good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Hey, Sean.
All right, fine, Sean.
Give it to Dean. Go ahead.
I have a medical malpractice, I guess it would be called. My doctor, I was diagnosed with sugar. And instead of him giving me insulin, he would just give me pills. So it got to the point where it was so high I had to go to the hospital. And I was wondering, is that a malpractice suit?
Well, all right, I'm going to give you my take on malpractice right now. A lot of things can be malpractice. Any deviation from the standard of care is considered malpractice. However, when there's not an associated damage that is significant, it's not a malpractice suit that you're going to pursue because the cost to pursue the suit would be substantially greater than the amount of money involved.
Yeah, one of the things about medical malpractice, and it has to do with the people talking about we want to put a cap of $250,000 on pain and suffering, which is really devastating, particularly to women who are at home. Who may not lose any wages and would be limited to $250,000 of pain and suffering, they're going to have a very hard time finding any attorney to handle that case if they can only max out at $250,000 and they have no lost wages. And then work on an attorney's fee where the costs of litigating the case are going to be equal or greater than the amount of money the lawyer potentially could make after handling it for 3 years. A cap of $250,000 on medical malpractice cases will absolutely destroy the ability of the people to be able to find lawyers to bring lawsuits on their behalf. You could have a woman, you know, dying of breast cancer on a misdiagnosis of a mammogram who has enormous pain and suffering, and they say, we're going to limit you to $250,000. Oh, but if your property damage is greater, we'll let you recover that. So if some rich guy has a $1.2 million Enzo Ferrari that gets destroyed, he could recover $1 million too. But if your loved one is dying of cancer and a misdiagnosis, they want to say, oh, you're only allowed to get $250,000. I think that's wrong.
I couldn't agree more. And as an example, what did you ballpark spend on expert witness fees on your Tropicana case?
combined, the plaintiff spent about $4 million just on expert fees out of our pockets.
Okay. So you can understand if the attorney's going to be spending, and even if it's not that drastic, but just on a regular medical malpractice case, you're hiring several expert witnesses from around the country, flying them in for depositions, you're spending $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $100,000, $150,000. That's just an ordinary case. That's not a Tropicana case. Well, if your case is only worth, you know, $10,000 or $50,000 worth of pain and suffering, even though there was malpractice, even though, yes, we could prove that doctors made a mistake, that's not a case that an attorney is going to be willing to take because it will cost more to litigate than the case is worth. We put our own caps on ourselves. We put our own kind of business decision into the mix in this. And so it's a two-part question. Do I have a medical malpractice case, and is it something that somebody would be worth pursuing for? And sometimes you have a malpractice case, but there's just simply not enough damage. You've suffered some pain and suffering, but you've gotten on with your life, and it's not the type of pain and suffering, not the type of devastation that an attorney would pursue.
And for the person, that's a good thing. When someone comes into my office, I always tell them, I hope you have the smallest case in my office, because you don't want to have the biggest.
Yes.
I want you to get better, get well, get back to work, be okay. And me tell you, you got a case, but it's small. That's
right.
The best thing for that person.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for calling and have a great
thanks.
Sunday.
The only bad thing about that is that the system, and when I say the system, I really have to blame the potential defendants, especially medical malpractice. Why is someone whose case is worth $50,000 not entitled to get their $50,000? It's because they will fight every case all the way and make you spend all this money just to get to the point of, even if they recognize that they're at fault. I mean, that's part of the way that the insurance company controls the system, and that's one of the problems that we have.
And that is the American legal jurisprudence system that, you know, each party is considered blameless until proven in a courtroom that they aren't, that they are to blame, just like everybody is assumed to be innocent until proven guilty. And we go through this process. So, and that's why on the criminal side, they have, you know, alternatives to full trials as well, because certain small criminal cases aren't worth pursuing with a jury. We try. We're not perfect. All right, let's try one more call before we end the day.
Yes, indeedy. We have Curtis calling in from Frankfurt. Good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
Hi, Curtis. Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
What's your question?
Yes, sir. I have a civil cover sheet from Court of Common Pleas, Philadelphia County. And this particular case is in reference to an automobile accident which occurred last September.
I take it you were sued, is what you're saying?
Yes, the papers were filed in August of 2009.
Did you have insurance at the time?
Yes, I did.
I would turn that over to your insurance company immediately, and they will retain counsel on your behalf. That's one of the privileges of having insurance. You don't have to retain an attorney to defend you. You do need to retain an attorney if you have an affirmative claim. If you were injured and believe the accident was somebody else's fault, you need to see somebody about that.
And you should really do that instantly, because the insurance companies will say, oh, don't go out and get a lawyer. We'll settle the case with you. And every single time that happens, the person ends up with less money.
Absolutely. Yes. I mean, I think what Bob's saying is that a lot of times innocent people who were injured in accidents, the first call they get following that accident is from an insurance company who says, we'll take care of you and we'll take care of everything. And what they really mean is, we want to rip you off and give you as little as possible.
It's usually $1,000
or something. Please don't call my Philly lawyer first.
That's right.
But the other thing is that really, you never really know for months and months and months how injured you could be. There's so many times we've all had the cases where someone's back sort of hurts a little bit and then it goes away, and then 2 months later it really starts to hurt, and they go in, they get an MRI, and they have a herniated disc that's really starting to manifest itself later on, and it came directly from the accident, but it didn't pop up until then. That person who goes out, the insurance company says, hey, we'll give you $1,000, settle the case, they're done. Yes. They could have major back surgery, never be able to work again, and then they gave away their rights too cheaply.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you so much, Curtis, for your call.
Thank you.
All right. We still have a few minutes.
Actually, we're down to pretty much the close. This would be the time for you guys to give your final thoughts on the program. We only have about 2 minutes left.
2 minutes.
2 minutes.
Yeah.
2 minute warning.
2 minute warning. Okay. Serious construction accidents, serious injuries require serious representation. How many cases have you handled?
In my career?
Yes.
I've probably handled a couple thousand, maybe 1,500. I'm happy to say, or proud to say, that we're closing in on 200 cases of $1 million or more that we've handled and that I've handled. So, which I'm proud of that. A lot of lawyers don't get one of those in their lifetime, and we take every one of them seriously because, you know, I look in the mirror and realize that every person I represent that's devastatingly injured, the rest of their whole life depends on how we do for them. And that's a devastating and tremendous responsibility.
Absolutely. And it, you know what? It takes guys who do this on a regular basis to understand the nuances of these cases, but also to be able to bring to bear these experts we talked
Absolutely.
About, you know, who can prove your case. If these cases, while we want to hold our fingers together and interlock them, the truth of the matter is that comes after distillation, after a long period of time where you're looking at the facts of the case.
Absolutely.
Well, one of the things that we want to tell people is that the law, personal injury law, is becoming as specialized as medicine. You have an orthopedist, you have a neurologist, you have an oncologist, you have various disciplines because there's so much to know. And the law is becoming the same way. I mean, a very substantial portion of my practice is just workplace injuries and construction accidents. We probably do more of them than anybody in the country. We do more falls than anybody. So, it's something that we continue to learn at and get better every day.
Absolutely. All right. Well, listen, Robert, we'll have you back again real soon. I want to thank you for joining us. David, have a great week.
Yes.
Tiffany, we'll see you next Sunday for
absolutely.
Another episode of Court Radio. Folks, thanks for being loyal listeners, and I'll see you next week.
All right. Have a peaceful, positive, and productive day. Stay tuned because Philly Speaks with E. Stephen Collins is up next.